Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Wednesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Daniel Foster, news editor at National Review Online, joining us from the Democratic National Convention, in for Jim Garrity today. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Dan, obviously, we'll be talking about the Democratic Convention in our second and third martinis. We're not going to ignore it. Want to make sure folks are aware of that, since we're not starting with that in our good martini today. But if you want a good encapsulation of the first night, head over to nationalreview.com and look for Dan Foster's 50 takeaways from the first night of the convention, and how the primetime hour was a little bit different than the rest of the night, which he says was very hardcore liberal. And the amounts that I could stomach, Dan, I would tend to agree heartily with your assessment. So the good martini is that there are a lot of people on the right wringing their hands yesterday as Ron Paul was headed to the Tonight Show to talk to Jay Leno. And one of the things people thought was, well, if he's going to the Tonight Show during convention week, he's probably going to have a big announcement. Some thought he might even join the Libertarian Party ticket with Gary Johnson. Others thought he would endorse it heartily. He had some nice things to say about Gary Johnson, but ultimately did not endorse it, obviously didn't join it. And now we get word, Dan, that from his camp that he has no intention of endorsing that ticket, which means that there should be a relatively limited siphoning off from the Republican ticket this year.
Yeah, it's good news. I think if you asked a lot of people in Tampa who Gary Johnson was, they would rightfully not know. And I always prefer it when nobody knows who the Libertarian candidate is. I do think it's good news. I think Ron Paul has gotten a bum rap in some quarters as a problem for the party. I certainly think some of his followers can be problematic. Under the right circumstances, he could split away a big block of the vote that would otherwise go GOP. But, you know, he's been throughout this campaign, for lack of a better word, a good soldier. And if you're Mitt Romney, you really have to appreciate Paul from the word go, going back into the primaries. And, you know, some people cynically say it's because his son is essentially being held hostage by the GOP establishment as if it were some, you know, medieval feudal war. And, you know, they trade hostages to make sure that the other guy doesn't screw him over. Sorry, that's a Game of Thrones reference for those nerds who watch on HBO. Whether it's because, he wants his son Rand to have a future in the mainstream of the Republican Party, or it's just because he, you know, is a loyal guy, or he thinks, you know, Mitt Romney would be a bit much better president than Barack Obama, so he doesn't want to do anything Nader-esque to spoil his chances. Whatever the reason, it's good.
Yeah, I think it's the last one that's the biggest thing. He realizes that another 4 years of Obama would be disastrous. We saw the national debt hit $16 trillion on the first day of the convention. That was a nice coincidence. And he has not had a lot good to say about Romney's acceptance speech, particularly his lack of any reference to the Fed. I think he sees which is the better option here. And so that's a good judgment on the call of Ron Paul. So on to martini number two now. And Michelle Obama was the headline speaker last night. Julian Castro was the keynote speaker. He's the mayor of San Antonio and had a lot of things that were untrue about Mitt Romney that he said, including how he didn't want the middle class to succeed. But Michelle Obama took a softer tone and talked about the president's policies a little bit. But she was really out there to tell the story of her and Barack. And we'll get to the clips in just a second. Very quickly, Dan, didn't it seem to you that this was almost a speech that should have been given in 2008? It was almost like she was introducing us to him again, as if we weren't living through the last 4 years.
Yeah, that's a good point. And I think President Obama, since the beginning of his public career, has made an effort to give as little of himself as possible. He saved a couple of biographical details in reserve for just such an emergency.
All right. So on to the sound bites now. A couple different ones here. First of all, this is almost a clip that could have come out of a Republican convention. Here's Michelle Obama talking about how important it was for her dad to be able to make the payments necessary, in addition to the scholarships and loans that she had gotten, to allow her and her brother to go to college.
But my dad still had to pay a tiny portion of that tuition himself. And every semester he was determined to pay that bill right on time, even taking out loans when he fell short. He was so proud to be sending his kids to college, and he made sure we never missed a registration deadline because his check was late. You see, for my dad, that's what it meant to be a man.
And that's kind of what the Republicans were saying in Tampa, Dan, is that people don't want the government just making them dependent step after step. This is a great story about overcoming physical difficulties, financial difficulties, and making a life better for the next generation. That sounds pretty conservative where I come from.
Yeah, you know, John McCormick over at the Weekly Standard, you kindly referenced my observations post from last night. McCormick makes a cameo there. Because he had a good point that I think a lot of people started to notice before I did. I was a little slow on the uptake. But there were really two night ones last night. There was the first few hours of speakers, which seemed to be a wonderful celebration of abortion in all its glory. It was very, very liberal. And then when the prime turned on, things got, you know, much softer, and they moved pretty quickly towards the center. And I think 95% of Michelle Obama's speech fits that latter mold. They're trying to tell the same story to the American, you know, swing voters. The Republican Party was that they are pro-free markets, not anti-success. You know, she was a little bit on the defensive about that, as was Julian Castro after Tampa. So, you know, they're trying to tell that story. At the end of the day, it's about who tells it more plausibly. And obviously, you know what we think. You know, after having the president of NARAL, Pro-Choice America, before the primetime cameras came on, at telling you to talk to strangers about reproductive rights and make sure they know the truth about Mitt Romney. You know, after stuff like that for a few hours, this was more for a mainstream American audience.
The other stranger part of Michelle Obama's speech, now this is Bad Martini Part B, I guess, and the story of both her and her husband starting with almost nothing and being helped along by the generations that came before. Here's the story she told about her husband.
Barack was raised by a single mom who struggled to pay the bills and by grandparents who stepped in when she needed help. Barack's grandmother started out as a secretary at a community bank, and she moved quickly up the ranks. But like so many women, she hit a glass ceiling. And for years, men no more qualified than she was, men she had actually trained, were promoted up the ladder ahead of her, earning more and more money while Barack's family continued to scrape by.
Okay, first of all, stepping in to help out is a little vague there. Basically, his grandparents raised him in his later young years and teen years. Then I don't know about the pace of promotion. Maybe she didn't get promoted as fast as the men. But his grandmother was a bank vice president, and he went to private high school at the ritziest private school on Oahu, Dan. So I don't know that they were exactly recycling aluminum cans to make sure that they could meet the mortgage every month.
Yeah, it's funny. We think of American bootstrapping as, you know, who was poor when they were kids. Abraham Lincoln, you know, as a rail splitter, sharing a room with six other guys as he worked his way through the, you know, empty-pocketed lawyer. All these stories of early, the overcoming of early adversity and poverty have become a major political virtue. So this was just, you know, let's face it, both of these candidates were not poor, certainly not as poor as somebody like, you know, Jimmy Carter, Bill Clinton. They were lived middle class or upper middle class existence, as did their spouses for most of their lives. The thing that really bothered me about that piece of Michelle Obama's speech is that in focusing on President Obama's grandmother, she uses all these sort of vague descriptions and half-truths and little flourishes here and there and embellishments. And it's clearly just the same sort of pandering to women that they were up in arms about the Republicans doing in Tampa. But it's okay to pander to women. It's okay to have minorities in your speaking lineup if you're the Democrats. Otherwise, it's political opportunism. So we're used to that double standard.
Yeah, no doubt about it. So on to Martini number three now, Dan. And last time I saw the weather forecast for Thursday night in Charlotte, it said 30% chance of rain. But the meteorologist on the Fox News channel yesterday from the local Charlotte Fox affiliate said Thursday night looking to be pretty good, especially by the time the president's supposed to speak. So a little curious today when the Obama campaign announced and the DNC that there's just too much of a threat of lightning, Dan. It has nothing to do with thousands upon thousands of empty seats that they can't fill in the stadium, so they're going to have to move it into the arena.
In fairness, the Secret Service can't protect against lightning strikes, so I guess I understand it from that point of view. This was always a bad idea. Look, when they first announced it, they had to call it Panther Stadium because they couldn't call it Bank of America Stadium. One of the ways they were going to do it was to just, in classic Democratic fashion, just send buses out in every direction and try and round up as many people off the streets and in the neighborhoods around Charlotte as they could. So I don't think it was going to be a truly intensively pro-Obama crowd the way that a smaller diehard crowd will be. It's funny, people were saying that the convention played very bored and very subdued on TV last night. I was inside the arena and I didn't think that at all. I thought these people were in the middle of some sort of religious revival. The Democrats were going nuts, and I think if the president speaks before a similarly sized audience, he's going to get all the conniptions and rapturous applause that he feeds off of. And if it were in Panther Stadium, you'd have it'd be an impressive spectacle for sure, but I think it'd be a more diffuse crowd and present all sorts of problems. And if it rained, everybody would be ticked off. So it was always going to be a political headache for them, and here's their convenient excuse for diffusing it.
Dan, since God's been scrubbed from the Democratic platform, are you sure you want to limit it to almost a religious experience now that they basically see government taking over the role?
Yeah, right. Acts of God. Right? Somebody had a joke. I think it was Mark Hemingway yesterday had a joke that, yeah, they took God out of their platform, but all they had to do was a search and replace with Obama. They just plugged in Obama everywhere God was.
Well, between that and taxpayer-funded abortions up to the last moment and scrubbing Jerusalem as the capital of Israel, it's been an interesting platform event for the Democrats, too, not just attention to the Republicans.
And I love how the mainstream media is reporting on just how extreme their platform is, the same way they did in Tampa.
Yes. Yeah, no difference whatsoever. Any strange encounters while you've been there the last 24 hours?
I did see a woman with a big, broad sun hat covered with straw hat covered with tea bags, that said no tea baggers. So that was pleasant. Sweet old lady with a nice profanity all over her hat.
There you go. Well, Dan, keep your head on a swivel as we go into tonight. Bill Clinton and Sandra Fluke on the stage the same night. That'll be interesting. And Joe Biden as well. So no lack of entertainment.
Will do, Greg. Thanks a lot.
Daniel Foster, news editor at National Review Online. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks so much for listening today. And join us again on Thursday for the next edition of the 3 Martini Lunch.